You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
We give you all the viral stories that are just about to drop. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, don't let this flop. If you keep scrolling, 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 and you're never gonna stop, then please, oh please, oh please, oh please, don't let this flop. From stupid songs and dances, all the cultural advances, we will cover them from bottom to the top. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, I promise you'll appease our please, oh please, oh please, don't let this flop.
Hi, I'm EJ Dixon.
And I'm Brittany Spanos. Welcome to Don't Let This Flop,
a podcast about TikTok brought to you by Rolling Stone. So we took a week off. Welcome back to us. In honor of New Year's. Brittany, how was your New Year? What did you do?
It was good. I mean, I ended up staying in New York for all the holidays this year, which was a plan I made before the COVID surge of December, but I ended up being very thankful for that. So I mostly just like hung around my apartment, which I loved. And most of my friends got COVID early on. I somehow evaded it. And so I spent New Year's with all of my antibody-filled friends. So we had a very nice little time.
Your Instagram stories were like incredibly envy-inducing. Like I have to say, it was just like all of these hot people like crowded around singing Robin. Yeah. I was watching them from like, because I had COVID and my whole family had COVID and we were still quarantining at that point. And I was just like under the covers, like watching people's Instagram stories from New Year's Eve, like they're in Miami or like, and you know, I don't even like New Year's Eve that much. Like I thought it would be a good excuse, like having COVID and quarantine, like good excuse not to observe this holiday that has traditionally been very like pressure filled for me. But no, like I was incredibly jealous of everybody who was doing fun things on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. I mean, like it was nice to sort of have, like, it was like a little, like it was like a small thing and it was a lot of, you know, my best friends there. And it was nice that like everyone was sort of like on the same page. There was only a few of us that hadn't gotten it yet, but we had been home literally like for the last 2 weeks. We were just like, okay, like we'll go with the antibody friends. Like we'll take all of the rapid tests like right before we go. And then we will have like a party. And so it was a nice little like little close friends type of event. So it was actually like one of the better New Year's I've had because most of them are stressful.
So I was seeing while I was home, I was seeing a lot of, you know, content from people in New York City who were, you know, testing positive for Omicron on my For You page, which is further evidence that the algorithm knows you better than you know yourself, because this was happening before I tested positive. But what else were you seeing on TikTok over the break that we're going to talk about today?
I mean, it's funny that, you know, we've talked a lot about how our For You pages have moved away from dance trends, right? Like you know, it's, and also TikTok itself has largely moved away from dance trends. But I was really shocked because there was one dance trend that I kept getting religiously on my For You page over the last couple of weeks. And it was for Caroline Polachek's So Hot, You're Hurting My Feelings. Do you know that song?
Explain who she is, because she's that kind of artist to me. Like I would have gotten her confused with like a Lucy Dacus or a Phoebe Bridgers before like Phoebe Bridgers blew up. Like those types of artists are like interchangeable to me. And I know they're super different, but like, so this might be just like internalized misogyny talking, but like if you could sort of explain who Caroline Polachek is, because I know she's been around forever.
Yeah. So if you ever heard of or listened to the band Chairlift, the indie pop group from like the mid-aughts, that is where she first cut her teeth. So Caroline was in Chairlift and she released some solo music while she was in Chairlift, but under pseudonyms. And one of the biggest career moves she made was she started to write and produce songs for other artists. She famously wrote Beyoncé's No Angel and an interlude on Travis Scott's Birds in the Trap, Sing McKnight. And she released this album, Peng, in 2018, late 2018. And it was like a big breakthrough moment for her. Like the album did really well. And at this point, she's sort of like partnered up with like the like A.G. Cook, Charlie XCX sort of like dance pop cabal that's happening. And she had been on Charlie XCX's Pop 2. Like she has sort of moved into like the weird pop mode of her career. And So Hot was a single off of that. And the single, you know, was very popular amongst fans who had gravitated towards the album. It wasn't a, you know, big top 40 hit, but the song, I think, you know, sort of gained a lot of clout. It was on a lot of year end lists. Pang was on a lot of year end lists. Her new song, Bunny is a Writer, very famously ended up as number one on Pitchfork's best songs of 2021, which was it was a little controversial, but it's a good song. And the video itself, like Caroline Polachek, me and one of our former colleagues, Claire Schaefer, were talking about this when we saw her in early December at Terminal 5. She has like very like elf girl aesthetic. Like she has like this very sort of like, you know, like Lord of the Rings. Like she looks like she's like an extra in Lord of the Rings almost, and kind of dresses like that and seems to embrace that.
Like in a Grimes way or in like a more subdued way?
In a more subdued way, I would say. And it's just kind of like, I don't know, there's a vibe about her that is like elf girl realness. And the video for So Hot is like her in this like kind of fiery, fantastical set. And she's doing a lot of soft choreo to the song. And the soft choreo is all over TikTok, which is appropriate for our previous conversation about soft choreography and the Hillary Duff-ness of TikTok dances currently. But this one is very specifically the dance kind of moves from like this like pensive perch, and then she's doing like this like pantomime of her doing like a seppuku, and then she like does some hip swerves. It's very easy. It's a little square dance.
Seppuku isn't like disembowelment.
Isn't that like when you stab yourself?
Yeah, it's when you it's literally when you take your intestines out of your body.
Yeah, it's like it literally looks just like looks like she's stabbing herself. That's the dance. Because you're so hot, you're hurting her feelings, so she's stabbing herself.
You're disemboweling yourself because they're so hot.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, got it.
So there was one video that I had seen kind of early on from the user 333blair333 doing the dance and captioning it with queer people learn Caroline Polachek square dance in order to identify each other in hell. And then we've seen like Cami Mendez and Charlie XCX participate in the trend. And of course, Caroline herself has hopped on TikTok to do the dance and has duetted a bunch of people with it. What's interesting, though, is, of course, with this sort of great clout comes a wave of cancellation. Caroline was called out by some users for being problematic in the past. Users pointed out her feud with the singer Kalayla, who in the last week had her Twitter hacked. I don't know if you saw all of that, but basically people were trying to sell PS5s from her Twitter. She has her Twitter back now, but it was a lot. And Kalayla had called out Caroline, who is a white woman, for posting a screenshot of a Kanye song on her Instagram story and quoting one of the lyrics without censoring the N-word. And others claim that she had once said she was made uncomfortable by a black woman in her yoga class and that she ripped off Haim. But the user Sam Yeet sort of, you know, he took a lot of this to task. He duetted someone who basically said that all these things are reasons to not listen to Caroline. And also that those three things are, for starters, not equal. But he also points out that the yoga controversy was actually proven completely false. It was just spreading really rapidly on TikTok and online. It was not Caroline who had ever said that. It was not connected to her. She was being canceled for something that she had literally never done.
Now, saying you're uncomfortable with having a black woman in your yoga class is far worse. But she didn't say that. Posting an unsubstantiated claim that someone did something terribly racist and then going, oopsie, it actually wasn't them, but refusing to remove your post is just slander.
What the user Sam Yeet had pointed out is that this was a fact-checkable thing. Like, if people had just Googled it, they would see that she had not done that. As for the N-word quote, he makes a case that, because she had also apologized about it, that it's on the lower level of racist activity to cancel someone for. She hadn't said it. She'd just basically written out the lyric of the song in her Instagram post.
Right.
And also the Haim thing, I think it's because of So Hot, but also like this is a sound that has existed in Caroline's music and also in other music previous to Haim. It's a weird thing to sort of say that she ripped off the band with this song. I wasn't really entirely sure if there was any other basis for that. It's a weird thing, but also unequal to even those two other things that also are don't even matter. But more than anything, this unsuccessful milkshake duck situation is another case of how internet poisoned our brains are, and that we can't enjoy something as simple as a little square dance set to a fun song. And I, for one, am not letting a poorly supported rage cycle ruin an absolute bop, and neither should you.
I'm surprised she wasn't canceled for the choreography that integrated Japanese ritual disembowelment.
I don't think that's why she did. I decided to call it that because.
Oh, so we should cancel you and not her for making that comparison.
I'm canceled.
Okay. Well, it was inevitable that one or both of us would be canceled throughout this recording of this podcast. So I guess it's happening now. So I don't know. Well, you do know about this about me. This isn't a surprise to you that there's nothing I love more than niche subculture drama on social media. We've talked about this in the past. There was a whole acrylic yarn community drama a few episodes. But did we cut that? I couldn't remember. I think we cut it.
I think we did cut it.
Yeah. So basically, Brittany and I talked about there was this TikTok where somebody posted some tips about how to do like a craft with acrylic yarn, and everybody in like the yarn community, with the crocheting community, went after them because what was she doing? She was like putting heat on acrylic yarn.
She's making pot holders, and you can't put heat on.
Right.
So it's like a fire hazard to basically they aren't functional pot holders.
Right. So that was the backlash, that it was a safety hazard. And then the backlash to the backlash was that people who were pointing out the backlash were being classist because acrylic yarn is significantly cheaper than other types of yarn. And it just went on and on and on. Yeah. And we also talked about there was this drama on this Facebook page where people pretended to be worker ants. And, you know, there was some internal tension in the community because the language on that page was considered ableist. I mean, you know, basically what we were talking about earlier, like another poorly supported like cancellation cycle going on in these little communities. But nothing is more fun for me to watch than this. And so imagine how fucking blessed I felt to be graced with Disney adult drama on my timeline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So Disney adult is a thing that's been like is a term that's been going around in the vernacular for a while. And how would you sort of like describe a Disney adult, Brittany?
I unfortunately have many Disney adults in my life and had previously dated a Disney adult.
Oh, you dated a Disney adult.
I just dated a Disney adult. Not the best decision I've ever made. But it's basically people who are obsessed with the parks, obsessed with like, you know, they carry their love for Disney into adulthood and turn it into a hobby. So sometimes they like collect Funko Pop. I have a cousin who like collects like Disney Funko Pops. Like that's like, or I guess all Funko Pops are Disney. I don't know. I've never had one in my life. But
I
like,
don't know. I'm not that deep into it that I would know.
Yeah. Like they like collect the merch. Care. Like I actually had an old roommate who like really was into like, you know, like Disney for adult jewelry and like different lines and stuff like that are like, you know, wear this like necklace that looks like Ariel's necklace. I don't know, stuff like that. I'm not familiar enough with the movies in that way to know why this merch existed. But they're also really obsessed with the parks. That's a big part of it is like they have like timeshares. They go to Disneyland. They go to Disney World. They go to all the parks. They love to be in the presence of Disney characters, and they're very familiar with the ins and outs of the adult Disney World.
Yeah, it's a very large community. I would consider myself, like, on the scale of Disney adults, I would consider myself maybe, like, a step or two below that, but only because, like, I have a partner who prevents me from going full-blown Disney adult, like, who hates the parks and who
hates
Disney.
I actually did not know this about you, EJ. I did not realize that you were so close to becoming a Disney adult.
I love Disney. I love the parks. Like, I've been there actually, like, this is not an exaggeration, more times than I can count. But saying that to other Disney adults is not impressive, because there are Disney adults who go, like, on a weekly basis or who relocate to Orlando or to Anaheim just so they can go every week and get, like, a season pass. Like, these people are committed.
Yes. I am familiar. I'm familiar with their commitment to it.
So right before New Year's, I see this video going viral.
This is mostly a video for the creators and vloggers who think they're friends with characters. And therefore, these kind of videos are okay for them to make because they know the performer. I wish you could see what these performers write about you or DM me about you. Every single performer I know hates character content.
And if you watch a video and you're not a Disney adult, and you're not going to understand, so I'm just going to unpack it for you. Basically, there's this former cast member, which is what Disney calls its employees, called Sarah Daniels. And she used to be a friend of various Disney princesses. Do you know what a friend of being a friend of means?
I do not.
So it means, it's Disney parlance for the actors who play these characters, because they want to keep up the mystique that it's actually Jasmine or actually Sleeping Beauty or actually Mulan or Princess Tiana. So if you are the actor who plays the characters, you say, oh, I'm a friend of those characters. You don't say I play them. You say I'm a friend of them. Mm-hmm. So, and people still say this, like, even long after they've left the parks and their jobs in the parks. So, and she gives tips on how to audition and tell stories about her time with the company and stuff. It's an incredibly competitive gig. I actually auditioned for a Disney princess gig and wrote about my experience a few years back. I will link to it in the show notes, but there's a lot of problematic shit about it that I found out. Like, their emphasis on verisimilitude is such that, you know, they don't cast people of color to play white characters. They will reweigh you obsessively to make sure that you still fit into the outfits after you're cast. Like, the one thing that they stress is they are trained to never, ever, 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 ever break character under any circumstances. Mm. And what has happened is there's this huge subgenre of content, of vloggers and content creators whose exists solely to throw these characters off their game and try to get them to trip up on camera. And there's this guy named Jojo Crichton, for instance, who does this. He flirts with the princesses.
Jasmine, flirting with Jasmine.
I could show you the world, but you already own a mirror. That was good, right? That was good, right?
There was a video that went viral last Christmas. It isn't Disney, but it's Disney adjacent, where someone asked the Grinch if they can be their baby daddy. Someone went viral for asking Captain Marvel if they supported gay rights.
Can you say gay rights?
I don't know if I can say that.
That's okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And to a certain extent, this is, like, somewhat harmless on its face, right? Like,
yeah.
These are trained actors. Asking the Grinch if he can be your baby daddy is kind of funny. But then
it's
you
like people going to, like, Buckingham Palace and trying to, like get the attention of the guards there, the very stoic guards.
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. I think that's a good comparison, especially when you consider that the Buckingham Palace guards probably aren't paid much. And these people are paid, these Disney characters are paid like $11.95 an hour. If somebody is caught saying something that's not considered in character, you know, that's their job at stake. Like, they'll be fired. So there's a lot of controversy in the community right now among Disney cast members who are going off on these creators who are capitalizing off these characters' labor. Mm-hmm. These people are getting, like, millions and millions of views and probably making a fair amount of money off this, and the Disney performers aren't seeing a single penny.
Yeah.
But mostly I just love that Disney adults on TikTok are inadvertently kicking off a conversation about labor rights.
Yeah. Yeah, good for that. I mean, yeah, I think it, like, sucks, especially just because, like you said, like, they're not paid well, and, like, they could lose their jobs if they are thrown off. Like, that's, I don't know, I think that's, like, a shitty position to put something that ostensibly you love going to Disney. If you're making these videos enough, you enjoy going to Disney enough to, like, continue paying to go to the park and film these videos. Like, it's just really shitty to do that to people.
But have you seen this trend of creators, like, they're in the supermarket and they throw down, like, milk and juice cartons as hard as they can, and then they...
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's an old trend.
Yeah, that slip and slide. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's, like, I mean, that sort of store pranks were such a big YouTube thing. I remember when I was in middle school and high school, like, that was, like, such a big popular type of a video, was, like, people doing dumb pranks that ended up, you know, when you're 14, don't realize will end up being, like, really awful for the people who work there, and, like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. Involves,
like, for people who are super underpaid already and, like, suddenly have to, like, clean up a mess created by a bunch of, like, idiot teenagers. So that was, like, such a big that was popular forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the more extreme example of how pranks and stunts on YouTube and TikTok, like, how building this culture sort of creates an ecosystem where, you know, extremely low-paid workers are, you know, affected by this and have to, yeah, you know, clean up the mess, even as you, the creator, are, you know, gaining clout and millions of views and getting rich off this. And I think that applies to basically any YouTuber who traffics, yeah, in pranks or stunts.
I mean, any viral content. I mean, if you think of, like, even the best Vine content, so much of that was sort of destructive. Like, I think of, like, Back at It Again at Krispy Kreme, which is the best Vine, but also it involved, like, literally breaking something at a Krispy Kreme. Like, it was like...
I mean, that's an incredible Vine, but yeah, somebody's going to have to pick up that sign that he knocked down.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Ija, do you want to tell us what straight people are doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go into straight people.
Straight people.
Speaking of Disneyland, a few days ago, Kim Kardashian posted a picture of her daughter, Chicago, with Chloe's daughter, True, at Disneyland. Did you see this pic when it was posted?
Yes.
It's a cute,
yes,
pic.
Cute. But the pic is photoshopped. It's, like, yes, some of the most worst Photoshop I've ever seen in my entire life for people who are quote-unquote billionaires. It is one of the most, like, obvious Photoshop photos I've ever
seen.
So
you immediately clocked it as a Photoshop photo?
Immediately. Like, it's not, there's nothing, it's literally so horribly done.
So did this user, Mitochondrial Membrane. She also clocked that it was immediately Photoshopped, and she posted this video.
I would genuinely like to know why this family is so fucking weird. So earlier, Kim posted this photo, and when I first looked at it, I instantly knew something was off. True just looks obviously photoshopped and like she's not really there, but I thought maybe I was crazy. But then this lovely Instagram page revealed that I am not crazy. True is photoshopped.
And there was this other, you know, fan account that kind of confirmed that it was photoshopped because they found the original source of the photo, mm-hmm, and it was Kylie Jenner's daughter Stormy who was in the original photo, and yeah, Kim or somebody apparently photoshopped a photo of True on top of Stormy. So can you please explain why on earth somebody would do this?
So there are a lot of theories. I mean, first off, the Kardashians are no stranger to, like, weirdly photoshopping people into photos. I remember there was, like, some Christmas card controversies where they had, like, photoshopped in Kanye or someone else into the group photo. So, you know, it's just like they've done this before. But with this one, it just seemed a little bit off for this very specific type of photo of the two kids hanging out. There seemed to be no need for the photo. It seemed weird to, of all things, put True into the photo over Stormy instead of just posting a photo of Stormy and Chicago hanging out at Disneyland. But some of the theories were that this was a distraction, which is also very, very possible, because this is another thing that the Kardashians love, is they love a public distraction to drum up controversy somewhere else to distract from another controversy. So at this, around the same time that this photo was posted by Kim and it started to confuse people about why True looked so obviously photoshopped into it, Travis Scott made his return to Instagram. And, you know, he posted this very pensive black and white photo. And this was the first time he had posted since the Astroworld tragedy had happened. And also his very controversial response to it and poor response to it. Kylie commenting with hearts on his post. you know, it's a very strange thing, though. I mean, it also comes right before the Tristan Thompson apology to Chloe on Instagram, which right. just happened a few days after this photo was posted. I don't know how connected it is, because it seems like the apology that Tristan posted did not seem like a very Kris Jenner thing to do, because it apologized for embarrassing Chloe by impregnating another woman that he at first denied that he impregnated, but then a paternity test proved that he had impregnated his third child, his third like partner with his third child. But it seemed to embarrass Chloe even more. So I don't know. It's just such a weird thing. I can't even try to understand their motivations anymore. Like, their motivations don't make sense to me anymore.
It doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like, why yeah. on earth would a photo of Stormy dated from October? This photo was taken in October and it was posted in late December. Why on earth would a photo of Stormy distract from Travis Scott's return to Instagram? Or yeah. why on earth would a photo of True, like, why would you Photoshop this photo of True onto a pre-existing photo to just like that? That makes more sense to me. Like, if they had foreseen this Tristan Thompson apology to yeah. Chloe, and maybe Kris Jenner was like, okay, so let's post this existing photo that we have of, you know, Kim's kid, and let's put True onto it. So maybe everybody, all the lifestyle outlets will gush over this photo of True instead of focusing on Tristan Thompson's apology. Like, that makes a little bit more sense to me, but it's also insane, because how on earth would that distract from it?
It is insane too, because it's just like, they all live next to each other, right? Like, there are a million photos of True with the other kid. It's not like True has never been photographed with like her cousins, you know, like there are so many photos of True and like Chicago and North and like the other, I don't even remember all their names. Anyway, there's like, it's not like there aren't other photos of True and the other kids. It's not like she's been like mysteriously missing from photos before. Like, she's in a lot of them. Why not just post an old throwback photo? Or why not like take a new photo? Why not just do something else? Like, it's so weird to have done that, because it doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no logical explanation. It doesn't make any sense.
I think it's the weirdest thing that they've ever done, honestly.
And it's still up. It's like, it's so baffling. Like, it's so confusing, because it's not even, there are so many other things they could have done, right? Like, there's so many things happening right now in the Kardashian extended universe that would just be a better distraction. North is on TikTok. Yes, Kim and Pete, first off.
Courtney and Travis are engaged.
Courtney and Travis. I mean, but you know, like they could just post another photo of them half naked making out. Like, that would have been a better distraction.
That would have been a much better distraction. To do. Kylie and Travis are expecting their second kid.
I mean, I don't know how much attention they want on that, but like, you know, that's happening. And you know, there's just so many other things. Kanye's dating Julia Fox, which, as you know, I'm obsessed with. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's just so many other things happening. It is literally so baffling to me that was what they chose to do. And the motivation just seemed, none of it makes sense. None of it's clicking for me.
I mean, speaking as a parent, I would be so offended if I were Kylie. And I would maybe even be more offended if I were Chloe, honestly.
Like, was it that make, I don't know. I mean, there's been sort of discussion of like them putting filters on their kids and things like that. Like, you know, that's been sort of a soft controversy, and also like not totally always kind of like, I don't know, they put filters on all their photos and everything, but especially like there are filters also on their kids in the photos. So I wonder, like, was it like Kylie didn't want the photos of Stormy and Kim really wanted to post the photos of Chicago? Like, I don't know. Like, what's going on in their brains that made sense?
I have no idea. If I were a parent and I had taken a picture and I saw that somebody else had posted, well, I am a parent. there's no hypothetical here. I am a parent. But if I saw that somebody posted a picture that my son was originally in and photoshopped another kid on it, I would fucking lose my shit.
Yeah.
I would lose my mind. And if I saw And if I saw, like, the photo was intact, but somebody had, like, edited the photo to make my child seem cuter in some way, that would be even worse. Like, I just don't understand what is going on in these people's heads.
I don't know. It literally, none of it makes sense. It is, like, there's even, again, like, even the distraction excuse just doesn't fully click. Like, it doesn't make sense because it doesn't draw more attention to Kylie and Travis to Photoshop out Stormy. Like, it's not like they Photoshopped out a photo, like, Penelope.
I don't know. Nobody has any idea what's going on. Nobody has made being weird and heterosexual an art form quite like the Kardashians. And honestly, I'm proud of them.
Yeah.
In a way.
Are you?
In a way. They've really taken, like, heteronormativity to, like, a performance. They've really elevated it to, like, a performance, to, like, a weird, toxic, confusing performance. It's kind of impressive. You kind of have to give them props for that.
Sure. Sure. You know, I'll give them a little bit. But speaking of toxic heteronormativity, before I was addicted to Instagram and TikTok, I was a Tumblr teen well into my 20s. And I mostly used it for fandom purposes, but I also really love the aesthetic of Tumblr. Were you an avid Tumblr user, EJ?
Yes.
Okay. So you're familiar with the Tumblr aesthetic of the...
I try not to think about it, honestly, because it embarrasses me too much.
Yeah.
Tumblr's thankfully archived.
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, like, I was on Tumblr at a time of, like, peak twee. You know, I started Tumblr around the age of, like Zooey Deschanel sort of being, like, a real big fashion icon. 500 Days of Summer had a weird grip on America at that point. Like, you know, it's very indie music, festival core, early Coachella. And by the time that I was sort of, like, towards my final years on Tumblr, there was a new aesthetic that really emerged that was sort of soft grunge. There's a lot of, like, black and white photos. If you've ever seen the show Skins, very, like, Skins core, lots of, like, Arctic Monkeys in 1975, like, very, very soft grunge 2014 aesthetic, like, denim jackets, deep side parts, Doc Martens, lots of black. So in a newish Vogue article, a writer makes a case that the 2014 Tumblr aesthetic is making a huge comeback thanks to TikTok. And also there was another case made that also that twee aesthetic of those early years of, like, the Zooey Deschanel core, kind of, like, weird 50s fashion retro nostalgia, but, like, make it ballet flats and, like, white tights, is also coming back. So if you remember a few months ago, there was a trend analyst on the app named Mandy Lee, who pointed out a resurgence of the indie sleaze look, which is very early aughts, American Apparel, Electro Clash, NYC kind of style that was happening on the app and on Gen Z fashion choices. So there isn't really it's a very short path between indie sleaze and Tumblr aesthetic. They're kind of very, very similar, very aspirational, very kind of, like, you know, skinny girl core of, like, looks and just general vibe, very, like, festival-y, very, very just, I don't know.
Yeah, like, you spend way too much time, like, venerating the work of Dove Charney.
Yeah, it was, like,
kind of the aesthetic.
We should all be thankful Instagram did not exist at the time, is basically what. So, and, you know, it's also makes sense because a lot of these aesthetics really never left, especially 2014 Tumblr, where, I mean, that was only 8 years ago. And so I feel like the people like me who were big on that aesthetic and loved it really just kind of always kept it as very soft goth, very, like, you know, it's very classic. It's just, like, lots of black, like, lots of sort of classic pieces, but make them moody and add, like, a cigarette and a black and white photo. And, you know, a lot of those kids are now entering their 30s. And again, 8 years later, still have a closet full of those fits based off of that Tumblr aesthetic. And the writer Arabelle Sicardi tweeted that the Tumblr girls are just actresses and editors now, and their followers are on TikTok doing what we did before them. We were never gone, just booked and busy. So, I mean, given that this nostalgia cycle is now even shorter than any of the other ones, again, this was only 8 years ago that 2014 happened and that this aesthetic existed. It's not that long ago. That was only literally 2 years before Trump was elected. That's an insane amount of time to now have nostalgia for. So if you blink now, the next trend will be like whatever was popular in 2019. But I don't know what that was because I was still dressing like I was in 2014. So
yeah, I never stopped dressing like the Tumblr girlies.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the Tumblr. I followed so many of those like dumb aesthetic accounts on Tumblr that were just like photos of like, you know, rainy windows outside of bookstores, you know, and like girls like smoking in Paris for whatever, you know, it's just stupid stuff like that.
Yeah, like black ripped tights, like short dresses and like big chunky boots. Yeah, I never stopped dressing like that.
It's like a photo of just like your Converse sneakers and a cup of black coffee. You know, it's just like all that dumb shit. Love those photos. Ate them up. Reblogged them all the time.
I'm reading Chuck Klosterman's book right now about the 90s. And he basically makes the point that the styles, whatever is popular at a given time, like the current generation always venerates the style of whatever came 20 years before it.
Yeah.
Like in the 90s, people wore bell bottoms and crop tops. Yeah. And, you know, for a time, people were dressing like, you know, Paris Hilton when she was out clubbing at like Marquee. And I feel like you're so right that like it's just that 20 year window is just getting shorter and shorter now. People are just have such short attention spans.
And the thing to think about, too, is that like that Tumblr aesthetic was literally just a rehashed version of the grunge aesthetic. It is literally soft grunge. Like that was the early 90s. Like that was the look, you know, it's a lot of like sort of, it was just I think a higher femme version of like early 90s kind of grunge looks.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody then would have argued that it was original either.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the funny part because it's sort of a mixture of some of the more purely 90s trends that have taken off for Gen Z and also like millennials, you know, it's still like a big part of like millennial and Gen Z culture of dressing very 90s. But the soft grunge look is kind of a very specific era of internet culture that's combining that 90s fashion trend with internet nostalgia, which again is getting very short. I think people kind of look to like earlier portions of the internet to relive, because being on Tumblr was a simpler time, especially if you were just following aesthetic accounts. Like we're all going to probably move to like Pinterest soon, which I already kind of have.
But you know what this means? This means that skinny jeans are back. Are gonna be back.
I'm not accepting that. I love a wide leg jean.
I do too.
I love a big pant with a tiny top. That's my favorite kind of look.
I do too, but that's gonna be out. And then the skinny jeans and the voluminous blouses are gonna be back in because that's what was in like the early 2010s.
I'm not accepting that portion of it. I mean, I don't know. Skinny jeans were fine. Like they were just kind of uncomfortable. It's hard to do a lot in skinny jeans.
Like, this is great news for the millennials who got all pissed off and were, like, tweeting, oh, the zoomers can take my skinny jeans out of my cold, dead hands, and we're being embarrassing about it.
So insufferable. I was just like, please get a hobby, like, anything. Anything that's not caring so much about having skinny jeans. But, yeah, like, it's very, I mean, I'm sure it will come back. And I do, again, I love the 2014 Tumblr aesthetic. I hope that the full-on, like, early 2010s twee aesthetic does not come back. Because the outfits were god awful.
It has come back. It's cottagecore. That's cottagecore. Zooey Deschanel is cottagecore.
Kind of. Yeah.
The fucking teacup dresses and the.
Okay, that makes sense.
Cozy sweaters.
I do
and
like
the
cottagecore.
Bows.
Yeah. But it's cottagecore is like an elevated version of that. Like that, like full on. Like again, remember ballet flats?
I do, unfortunately.
That's all I wore. My first 3 years in New York, I just wore ballet flats. Ripped up my feet walking around the city.
Did you, were you struck by, we promised ourselves we wouldn't talk about the Sex and the City reboot, but were you struck by the part where Carrie's like, I've never worn flats in my life. Like I've never had a flat shoe in my life. And it's like, bitch, weren't you around in 2010?
But she said the Tom. That's what I loved that. I loved when she had mentioned the Toms though. She said the only sneaker that she'd ever owned was Toms because it made her feel like a good person.
Did she ever wear Toms on the show?
No. I don't. Well, because, I mean, you know, at the end of the episode, spoiler alert, but she gets back in her heels after she recovers from her hip surgery. So we did not see her in them.
We can't talk about the show.
That's going to be a very special episode where EJ and I just dissect the entire season of And Just Like That, which I honestly, Maybe we should when it's over.
We should kind of do recaps. I have been devouring recaps on TikTok. Like, some of them are very funny. But let's do Himbo. Are you ready for Himbo?
Let's do Himbo.
So our Himbo of the Week award is somebody that Brittany was fortunate enough to find. So I think you should do the honors at introducing him.
Okay, so I have become obsessed with the user Mr. Papa 85. He is a geriatric gentleman who makes content on TikTok that he very explicitly labels adults only. And he's just like, you know, it's very horny content.
If you want to make love, then I suggest you go somewhere and fall in love. But if you want to get your ass dragged, if you want to get your hair pulled and choked and called all kind of goddamn names and popped all on your ass and get your back beat out and goddamn, just goddamn go through a motherfucking situation.
He is just saying that he, like, you know, he's giving a little 50 shades. He's saying that if you want to find love, go find love. But if you want to get your ass dragged, you got to go to Mr. Papa. And I'm obsessed with him.
And he also, I think it's important to note that he very explicitly labels his channel adults only.
Yeah.
And it's not like, it's not like pornographic content. It's just him, like, talking about, like, you know, sexually explicit things, like, in his car.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for him to label it as such.
It's just him monologuing.
On various subjects. Like, you know, he talks about how his grandson... you know, was saying that he got this girl pregnant, but he couldn't have gotten her pregnant because they only had oral sex, and you can't get pregnant via oral sex, which is true as far as I know.
Hey, well, oral sex. He said, so, you know, unless I can get her pregnant with my tongue, that's the only way she's pregnant by me, granddad. And I just looked at it.
I don't think it's inaccurate. You know, he caters to the IBS community.
I stumbled across your photograph. And the shit kind of just made me laugh. I remember I was beating your back guy and your big old nasty ass passed gas.
He caters to the evangelical community.
But if accepting Jesus is going to empower me to plant my foot in somebody's ass wherever it's needed, then I'm in. I'm all in.
Like, the more I watched his content, the more I think that he would actually be a viable candidate for the presidency. Like, he's got all of these demographics on lock.
Yeah, I'd vote for Mr. Papa 85.
Absolutely. We have to beat Trump in 2024. And our current prospect isn't cutting it.
Yeah, we're on the Mr. Papa platform now.
He does have, I should say, with one caveat, he does have like a soft homophobic lip dub of a Full Metal Jacket scene on his channel. Oh. So as long as he deletes that.
Then you need a clean slate of Mr. Papa just being horny.
He should hire us as his campaign managers, because that's what I would say when we first take our meeting. Like, listen, you know, I went through your socials. It's all great. It's all really solid stuff, but you got to get rid of the soft homophobic Full Metal Jacket lip dub. And he'd be like, okay. And then I'd be like, great. I think that you know, have a luck.
I do also, I appreciate that it's like for the adult content, it's not 18 plus, it's be 21 or be gone. He's like, you need to be of legal drinking age in America before you watch these videos.
That's not even the requirement for your average, like, hardcore porn site.
But for Mr. Papa, maybe he's more hardcore than the most hardcore porn you can have.
I think that's what he's suggesting. Anyway, we should have him on, probably.
Yes. Thanks so much for listening to Don't Let This Flop, This Week in TikTok, brought to you by Rolling Stone and Cumulus Podcast Network. Written and hosted by me, Brittany Spanos, and EJ Dixon. Executive produced by Jason Fine, Bridget Shelsey, and Elizabeth Garber-Paul. Edited by Dan Stein. And original music composed by Daniel Mertzleft.
Yeah. The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.